Hey, just a minute.
Why don't you scoot up?
Well, I can scoot it back. We need to move this.
There
we go. The mic. I see you. Can you see me?
Yes, sir.
I see you better than
I am Candy. I'm an alcoholic.
Candy.
This is my first time that I ever, in 40 years, get to be the speaker. So, hey. You know, I'm going to go back a little bit and break a little bit of AA. This is, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my life and where I come from. And that's going to take a very short time. And then I will proceed to go on. My dad was a cowboy over 50 years. He took care of cattle and a ranch. And he did this in Springerville, Arizona, which is not too far from Fort Apache, but it was in the White Mountains. A lot of snow, a lot of cold, a lot of mountains, a lot of trees. And my dad had horses, and the nicest thing that dad and mom did for me is they bought me a Navajo Indian pony and my own saddle, and I could go, boy, I'd go everywhere when I wasn't going to school. And that was something that a lot of kids, you know, you hear today, gosh, wouldn't that be nice? Sometimes I'd get to go with my dad, and he'd be taking care of cattle, and I'd be with my pony, and he'd set up a tent. And every night it seemed to rain, but never got wet in his tent. And we had some homemade Indian blankets, and we'd crawl in there, and lightning and thunder, and I would sleep so good. And that was Springerville. There was a little river that on the other side of the river, about a mile from Springerville, was our little ranch, and then we had a bigger ranch further up. And we had a little house there, and in 1932, in that little ranch, we didn't have a bathroom or water or electricity. It was a ranch. We were ranchers. We didn't have a whole lot of money. We didn't have too much for Christmas. You know, I remember one thing that we got one time was from my aunt. She made some of that popcorn balls, and you take a bite of that and your teeth would come out. So, you know, that was kind of what we got. But I was born in that little ranch, and in a bathtub, those big round cajetes, where you used to wash the laundry, you know. That's where I was born. And don't you feel sorry for me for one second? So, okay, that's enough. But anyway, that was our beginning. Now, as years went by, Dad and Mom had seven of us kids. And to hurry this up a little bit more, we kind of grew up, and here along comes here World War II and Hawaii. And my dad and all of us kids, we didn't know where Hawaii was or Germany or anything like that. We were in the ranch. You didn't have newspaper, you didn't have radio, you didn't have anything, you didn't know. But World War II came. And all of a sudden, my older brother went. And Dad and Mom couldn't understand what was going on. And he was gone, and he was fighting in the South Pacific. And my next brother went, and he joined the 1st Marine Division. And he was in the Marines. and he fought in Okinawa, and he was killed there. And he didn't last very long. None of those guys were expected to live. Almost none of them lived. And then along that time, my mom and dad, what they got was just a plain old telegram. You lost your son, was killed. And that was all. And my dad died at 70. My mom lived 3 months short of 100 years. And she suffered all that time wondering what happened to her kids, to her two boys. And it was kind of sad for them, you know, because today, you know, they get the flag and they get pulled out, and I think it's wonderful. I am a veteran myself. I joined the Navy, and I was a Korean veteran, and I drove a boat, and I would load off my ship some guys, and they'd come into my boat. I'd take them, hit the beach, lower the front, they'd jump out, and I'd go back to the ship to get some more. That was my job. Meanwhile, my mom, I would almost hear her say, I don't know what happened to my sons. She just couldn't figure it out. She couldn't put it together. And they were not educated. You know, my dad, I think, only went to the third grade. My mom went to the fourth grade. It was that kind of thing, you know, very poor. And it was kind of sad for my mom. And my dad, of course, went a little bit earlier. So he's up there and he knows what's happening. And my mom knows now because we were good Catholic, good people. You know, my dad, I saw my dad drunk one time. I saw him drink beer one time. My mom never touched it. And my mom never smoked. And my brothers, except my younger one, smoked. And that was kind of how, that's the part of the part that you might be interested in knowing about me, I don't know. But that's how it was then, and I my mom's gone now, of course, but she suffered for a long time. I felt so sorry for her. My brother is still buried at Golden Gate National Cemetery. I wish he could have come home, but no, he's still there. And I thought of trying to get him to where he'd go to Boulder City, where my dad and mom are, but you know, it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to do that, but I sure wish I could. Along comes a little more time, and I was, of course, I went in the Navy, and I was in 1951 to 55, something like, I can't remember. Oh, and that's another thing you're going to be knowing about me, I can't remember. Caca. And I can't remember nombres, names, or dates. But then, you know I don't look it, but I'm 87.
Right on.
And wouldn't I look great for 87? Well, I don't feel that damn good, I'll tell you that much. I heard everywhere, every day. You know, so that being older and not feeling good is kind of a tough way to go. And my wife, my sweetheart, there's my sweetheart boy. She hurts a lot nowadays too, and I kind of feel sorry for her. But let me tell you, nobody has any better a sweetheart than I have. And that's my wife. And I not only love her, but I'm in love with her. And that's how that is. Yeah, I tricked her into coming and cook. That slipped up. I got her to come over to cook for me, but you know, the thing of it is, I wanted to dance with her, and I wanted to be her to be closer to me, and you know, so yeah, she. I'm going to drop that. Now, I was in living in Santa Monica, working at Venice Beach, in charge of some of the guys that did the tractors on the beach and cleaned up the beach and all that. I was second in charge there. And I had a lot of people that, I had 40 guys under me, and my boss, he didn't like being there, so he left me in charge, and things went pretty good there. But before that, you know, I'm going to be a little bit crazy on my timing, but I was in Santa Monica when, and I was married to a very lovely woman. She was very, very good wife and all that, but I was drinking like a crazy fool that I was because of my drinking. And I drank and drank and drank, and she couldn't put up with me anymore. And so one day, I'm sitting there in the house, and here comes the little knock on the door. It's how it used to be. It's not that way now, but the little girl says, "Are you Mr. Candelaria Cesario?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "You're served." That's how they did it. And you were served. And she says, "Your wife is suing you for a divorce." And, you know, she was a nice person, but, you know, I lost my train of thought a little bit, but I'll get back with it. And we became very close friends. She's gone now. She died about 3 or 4 years ago. I don't remember, but she's gone now. My first wife is gone also. And with her, we had two sons. My son, Bruce, and he's living in San Diego now. He's still looking for a wife, and he's almost 60. And my other son, Brian, was my older son, and I'll tell you more about him. And then I had my little son. He was about that tall. Not anymore. But so just so as time went by, I lost her, and I decided, you know, I think I was in Santa Monica, and I thought to myself, you know, I think I'm going to go to some AA, and so that I don't drink so much, and learn to drink, as we say, like a gentleman. And so I started going to 26th and Broadway in Santa Monica. And I went with the idea that I wanted to get out of there and go back to drinking a little more sanely and starting to dance, because if you were looking for me, I was on the dance floor somewhere. I used to even do ballroom dancing at one time. And so that when I was in Santa Monica, and I went to the meeting there at 26th and Broadway, and I started there, and I sat in the very last seat behind a lady that was pretty good sized, and I hid there for almost a year. And I never would do anything to be found, and before they started the Our Father, I went out that door that I was right next to. I went in my truck, and I remember the first time that I went to 26th and Broadway. I went there in my little old pickup truck, and after a while, I got to going in that truck. One time, I went in there and I was shaky. I couldn't hold coffee. It spilled all over, and you know how that is. And some of the guys came over to me and said, "Boy, you know, Why don't we, you want us to drive you home? We'll drive your truck for you, because they could see I was in bad shape. And I thought, these suckers are trying to steal my truck. And so the next time I went to a meeting, I hid my truck three blocks down and walked to the meeting and sat behind the old lady. When the meeting was over, I went out and I forgot where my truck was. And the cops helped me find it. And they said, how come you don't know where in the hell your truck is? And I says, I'm just not a well person. And they says, I guess not. I think we know where your truck is because it's been parked there for quite a while and it's three blocks away, not two. So they helped me get to my truck, and that's how my AA kind of started. And I just didn't do anything the way you were supposed to, it seems. You know, it was, and I lose my time of where I was when, but I remember I used to go in there to eat my lunch. I drove a city truck, the yellow ones you've seen for the city of LA that I work for, and I'd go in 26 and Broadway and have me a sandwich, and then I'd go on about my job. And I used to sit there, and there were these old timers. They had 15 years, they were old timers then, 15 and 20 years. And there was one big guy. He was like a cowboy. He wore boots, he had a hat, and he had his neckerchief. And I hated this guy. And I just didn't want anything to do with them, but I'd sit over here and they were always in the corner over there. They'd do that all the time. They were the old know-it-all guys, you know, that think they know everything, I thought. And one day this big guy I see him coming right toward me. And he comes right toward me and he says, hey. I said, yeah. He says, oh, do you have a book yet? I said, no, and I can't afford to get one. He says, well, you don't have a book yet? I said, no, and I can't afford to buy one. And he said, and I got feisty right away because I just didn't like this guy. He says, well, he says, if you get a book, is there anything else you need? And I said, well, you know, I just got kicked out of the house and I would sure like to have a TV. He said, no problem, I have one in my attic. I said, really? He says, yeah, if you buy the big book or get the big book and you go home and study chapter 5, I'll get you that TV. And I said, well, really? Well, here, let me pay for it. You know, he says, I thought you didn't have any money. I said, I got plenty of money. I'll buy that. I want that TV, you know, but I didn't tell him that. And so I go home that night and I studied chapter 5 like you can't believe. I knew everything about chapter 5 that night. Next morning, I got up. And I'm on my way to that meeting, and there he was, sitting down, talking to the guys. And I had my book with me, and I keep looking at him, wondering, you know, what about the TV? And he got up, they all had these big white coffee cups, and he got up and got the coffee cup, and he started to leave. And I said, well, I better get to this guy now. So I walked up to him and I says, hey, I said, did you get that TV? And he said, did you read chapter 5? I said, yeah, I read it really good. He said, "Great. I don't have no TV. I don't even have an attic." And he left. And I got my first resentment. Butthole. It turned out to be that that was his way of getting me started on chapter 5. He knew exactly how I was going to be, the kind of ding-dong I was, and that's how he got me started doing that. So, you know, I resented him for a long time until I started going to AA a little bit more, a little bit better. And so I also met this kid's mom there. And what's your name?
I don't know.
John. Oh, no, that's, what'd you call me last night? Your sweetheart or something?
Girlfriend.
Oh, my girlfriend here. And so we finally got together and we had this little brat right here. And there's a lot of stories here, you know, and my life's been a long one, so I can't put them all together just quite the way I'd like to, but because I don't have enough time for one thing. It's a long story and I've got to move on. And so anyway, I went to 26th and Broadway and I helped start a Spanish club because I could speak Spanish, and they were working at the Catholic Church there to get a Spanish club going. I helped with that. And then I was going to 26 and Broadway, and my truck that I had kept breaking down all the time. And I'd call this guy and he'd come and help me. And I'd call him up and here he'd come and help me. And one day he said, "Candy," he said, "you know, why don't you ask God for a new truck, for heaven's sakes?" I says, "Sure, no, I'm not going to get a truck that way." Yeah. And he says, "Sure you will." He says, "Just tonight when you go home, you open the back door, you look out, and you say, 'God, I need a new truck.' And just wait, you'll get a truck." I said, "No, I'm not going to do that." But when I got home that night, I opened the back door, I looked out, I said, "God, you know I need a new truck." And I walked back in and I walked back out real fast and I said, "Lord, could you make it a red truck?" And I went back in to my room, and 20 years later I got my truck. Because I was told to be patient. How patient can a person be? It takes you 20 years to be patient. But I got my new truck. The bad part about it is I had to pay for the damn thing. You don't get it for nothing, you know? So those are some of the things that happened to me, you know, that... back to Venice Beach. Venice Beach went to the county and they traded the city of LA some different things, and they had to get me another job, and they asked me what I would be interested in doing, and I said, "Well, I wouldn't mind going to camping section if they have a place open." And they said, "Yes, there is one open spot there in Crestline." And I thought, "Wow, can I have that?" And they said, "Yeah, you're in line for it, and you have what it takes to do it." And so I was transferred to Camp Sealy, and I really loved it. When I got there, Camp Sealy, this camp was a mess. Leaves were piled up against the doors, and it was my way. I started raking to the point and cleaning up to the point that the boss that I had and the other guy that was like me didn't like it, because that meant they had to get up earlier and start doing a little bit of work to make themselves look at least as good as me. And I was having a ball cleaning this camp up. I raked, when you came to this camp, this floor shined. Everything out there raked. You could see the raking spots. And I liked it. And I finally took the test for a camp manager. There were a little over 200 people took that test. I made number one. And I got the job, and right away I saw some campers coming, and when I left Santa Monica and got here, there was not too much AA. And I thought, Lord, it'd be so nice to have an AA meeting here someplace, in the lodge or outside or something like that. I thought about that for a few months. But, you know, I'm the only one here, but I made camp manager, and I'm the only one here. And right away I thought, there's no way I can get 125 people up here. I have trouble getting, you know, just maybe 6 or 7 or 10 at the most. And that's how my thinking started for Camp Sealy. That's what I thought about. How can I get a camp going here with AA people? And you are all out there. I'm the only one here, and I have no way of knowing how I'm going to get you all to know that I want you up here, and how am I going to get you there? But somehow, and I don't remember how, I found 9 people, I think it was. And they came up, and we talked. There was a little house there that I lived in. I loved that little house. And since it's been gone, but those 9 people are the ones that told me, let's try this again. I had to ask the city of LA permission to have people here on just a Friday, Saturday thing. And I asked the city of LA, and they allowed it if it wasn't busy. So they said, let's do it again. I said, well, you know, we're never going to get 125 people here. But they said, well, let's try. So I asked the city of LA, they let me. And we went, and they went out there looking for more people, and they found twice that many. But there were 18 of us that showed up. And we cooked right out here. We made our own breakfast with barbecues and stuff. Best breakfast I think I ever ate. But there was only 18 of us, and we still needed 125. So after we did that, I said, well, it was fun, and that's the end of that, but at least we got you guys up here, and we got AA up here at least once. And they said, let's go for the whole weekend, let's try it again. I said, no, we can't get it. They said, ask the city of LA. So I did. And the city of LA said, well, if it's not busy, you can go ahead. So after the 18 people, and I paid for the food, I made it, I fixed it, and we got 30 some people. And I paid for their food, and we got to use the kitchen and all that. Now, I've got to tell you something very important here. I had no help I had to do everything, but I did have three sons. And I asked them to help me. And this guy here, he's the oldest one that was with me. He's the one that I think we owe a lot of thanks to. Because he did, he'd go in there and say, "Dad, I want my hotcakes and eggs." And I says, "Okay. And then will you do the dishes and the break eggs and all that?" And he says, "Yeah, I want my breakfast first." Until the day came when one day he comes in and he says, "Dad, I want breakfast." And I said, "You see all those dishes over there, pots and pans? Do them and then I'll give you breakfast." So I turned it around on him. You know, but he doesn't probably remember that, but you know, back to that, I got about 30 some people. They all wanted me to try it again. I tried it again, and I got the following year, I got I don't remember, 50, 60 people. And then the last time I tried it, we had 125 people. And that was the beginning. And I thought, my goodness, we did get people up here. I managed to get people up here. I worked hard to get people up here. I called, and I'm leaving a little something out. There was a guy down San Bernardino that told me that in order to get this camp going, to go ahead and get the AA people, his name was Tom, he's been gone a long time now, and he said, "You get your AA people," and he told me how to go about putting the camp together, and he was really helpful. But somehow in there, and I can't remember anymore, but I couldn't get enough AA people. That's what it was. I couldn't get enough AA people, and he said, "Well," he said, "I'm going to tell you what you do. Make it AA and Al-Anon, and you should be able to get your 125." That's what happened, and I forget. So I got Al-Anon going in there, but he told me one thing. He said, "Kendi, I want to tell you one thing. Never get anything going." Shut up. Never. Hello. Never go and let anything else start by except Al-Anon and AA. Nothing else. Never stop. Because if you do, you will run into trouble. At first, it'll look great. But only AA and Al-Anon. And, you know, recently we had a group that tried to start. And I love them. I'd like to be one of them, but what are they called?
N.A. CODA.
Double winners. And I couldn't let them start because that's the one thing that I was told that don't ever do. They tried to start it over here and I stopped it and I made a little bit of enemies with people, but you know, I did what I was told and it worked. And I won't let anything, when we have, that's why I stick to when you have your birthdays, it's only Al-Anon and AA. That's how I started this camp. The camp was mine. Guess what? It still is mine. But you run it. You all vote for everything that goes on. But it's still my camp. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Do you disagree?
Yeah.
You know, we always have some snotty-nosed people that think they know. And of all of them, here's the biggest and the snotty-nosed. Smart Aleck here. But, folks, if I don't let anything else start, it's because that's how I started it, that's how I was told to do it, and that's what works. And when something works, don't change it. Don't mess with it. So double winners, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to stop you, but you know, May, if you ever start anything, I'll go join you because I like double winners. I am one. But it's not going to happen in this camp while I'm alive. Because it's only going to be, thank you. It's, what?
You got 4 minutes.
Four more minutes.
I'm going to go over a tiny little bit. You know why I'm going over a tiny little bit?
Because it's your camp.
Because it's my camp, because I can. And it's not going to be much longer, but just so that I can finish. I don't know if I've covered, there's so much to this camp. There's so many things that I could tell you about. But you can catch me out there anytime that you have questions for me of how anything went, did, and that, what, you know, this, that, and the other. And I'll be glad to help to answer some of your questions. But this camp has been here for 40 years. 40 years is a long time, folks. And a long time, and it's worked really good. I want to call up here real quick, Dan. Please come up here. While he's coming up here, Bear, would you stand up, please? Now, Bear is one of the guys that helped me an awful lot to help save this camp. He helped me, he's been on my side, my team, and I appreciate him very much. We also have another guy that helped me, he's a smart aleck. He's, I think he's gay, I'm not sure. Would you please stand up, buddy?
John.
You know, every time that I ask Sean to do something for me, he's never failed me. And I want to thank you, buddy. Now, these are just two of the people that,
Parate.
That's a stand up.
See, this guy here, folks, he is Mr. Camp Seeley now, as far as I'm concerned. Because he keeps this camp going. He knows all about it. He lets me talk to him about things that I want to talk about. And we talk about things and we come to a decision. And we always have respect for each other. But he is the guy that's going to take care of you for quite a long time to come. I just feel that. And so far, thank you so very much. Now, John, stand up. This is my longest working Camp Seeley hot cake eating. Son of mine that I love very much. He was here to help do the pots and pans, break eggs and all that, and he was only a little kid. But he helped me and he's helped get this thing started. Thank you, son. I love you. Now, here one more time. Stand up, honey. Now, this wonderful lady is just, without her, I'm nothing. That's just how it is. In all of our lives, She's there for me. I need something. It's there waiting for me. Thank you, sweetie. I love you. Thank you. I know we're using a little bit of the 40 of the time, but you know, some of these things I want to bring up. Now, I don't care. The thing of it is that I forgot what I was going to say. Shoot.
Okay.
But
it's cutting into some of this time, but there's some things we need to say.
I'm not going to. It's not going to come back. But I'll tell you what. It's I'm starting to lose it. But you know, it's been a lot of work. But I have so much fun when the dance starts. Watching all you people start to dance. I can't dance anymore. My wife, I feel sorry for her because I know she wants to dance. But the dance starts and you people go wild out in this floor and it brings tears to my eyes. Because I started this as cheap as I could so that you adults could come and have a good time.
Thank you.
Because we don't make any money. We just have you here to have a good time. And we don't have pets or kids so that you can come here and just be adults. And there's a lot more things. I know I have to stop now. There's so much more that I'd like to talk about, but I just don't have the time. There's a lot of things that have happened. And I'm just so glad to be here for you all these years. Thank you.